Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, this is Brandon Pham. Be sure to check out our partner 80.lv's articles, such as Character Production Tips from Marie Michelle Pepin, show the way she can create her latest 3D stylized characters. Also, there's an awesome article on Old Hunter's Manor from Bloodborne done in UE4, where they talk about Moses St. Flair, about the way he created this outstanding environment inspired by amazing game space and concept art. Also, if you're looking for awesome YouTube Unity tutorials, be sure to check out the Brackies team on YouTube. All right, let's jump right into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, all over the world, the globe, the galaxy, wherever you happen to be while this voice is coming through your earwaves, this is Larry Charles, one half of the Game Dev Unchained podcast team, and Brandon and I thought it would be really awesome if we brought a celebrity guest to help us host the podcast. He has 100,000 miles on his United Airlines card, Mr. Brandon Pham, actually.
What's up, everybody? Yes, flying in to give you this podcast this week with a special guest. Please welcome this week, Blaine Pascu.
Hey, Blaine.
Thanks so much for having me.
Just in case anyone tripped up, see, I was trying to trick you guys by saying Brandon and I brought a guest to host. It was just Brandon all along.
It was me.
That's what happens when you have a celebrity, right?
Yeah, seriously, man. They don't understand how cool it is to work with Brandon every week. So I just, you know. But Blaine, you're the guest of the hour. At the beginning of every podcast, we like to have our guests kind of walk the audience through their resume and their career history a little bit. So if you don't mind, can you give us the cliff notes of your job history?
Sure. I mean, so most of my job history is actually just at Unity. I've spent the past 3 years at Unity. Two of those were working on the asset store team doing like asset management and curation. So it would be a lot of, hey, this person submits a 3D model. Hey, I have to make sure that their textures look all right, that they're actually like the materials are signed, that it's kind of ready to go in terms of as best we could, at least. But then the other half is I more recently moved to a community and social media role. And that's where I've been the past year. And so, I mean, to sum it up, that's pretty much my job history in the games industry. Before that, I was attending the Art Institute studying 3D art and animation. And so that's kind of how I got my foot in the door.
Oh, nice.
Oh, a survivor.
Survivor. Yeah. I made it out alive. I deserve a little badge.
Made the Cavaliers little circles once in a while and talk about our experiences. But like, that sounds great, dude. Like, you know, that's like a home run as far as a resume goes, dude. Community managers in particular, it's probably something that not a lot of people know about. It's starting to become a thing. Well, I mean, the last 6-7 years at least, when social media started to blow up. Do you mind kind of going over what is a community manager for all those noobs?
Sure. I mean, so the role of a community manager is really to do your best to engage and interact with your community. So I guess for my situation at Unity, a lot of that is I spend a lot of times on the forums talking to people. I spend a lot of time on answers talking to people. But to your note, a lot of it's also on social media. And so I think it's funny. Some people in the office say that I'm like 1/3 of the Unity Twitter, because there's only it's actually pretty surprising. Our company is fairly large now and we have a huge social following, but there's only three to five of us, depending on the day,
So
manage that.
Does it increase my chances of getting through if I just at Blaine instead of at Unity?
It might. Every once in a while I actually get like a DM from someone on my personal Twitter being like, hey, I did this cool thing, can you share it? And I mean, to the best of my ability, I try and accommodate. But
that's awesome.
Yeah. And so, yeah, a lot of it's reaching out to different people in different communities. I have a lot of friends in the San Francisco game development community that I keep touch with or keep in touch with. And aside from just engaging, one of the things I really enjoy about being a community manager, it's this idea that I can kind of hear what people are saying in our community, gather feedback and push it back to the different teams in our department. So say someone's having a lot of trouble or say something launches and it's going really well, I can echo that feedback back to the team who worked really hard on it and make them feel good about themselves. Or inversely, if there's something that all of a sudden blows up, a build's super unstable, which has happened before, it's a lot of hard work kind of gathering and trying to break all these voices down and figure out where to properly pipe them to get the issue addressed. So yeah, I mean, at a broad level, it's a lot of social media, it's a lot of our community forums and platforms, and it's a lot of listening to people.
So from a social media standpoint, you know, there's always information that you have that people want to know, you know, so what is it like walking that line of like, oh man, I hope I don't spill some beans today. You know what I mean?
I think I walk it pretty well. I mean, the company's always got a lot going on and we always do our best to communicate what needs to happen at the right time. And so that's a separate part of the job is making out timelines and trying to keep in mind everything that's going on, especially at a company with so many different teams, keeping all of the information together and keeping it all like in the forefront of your mind, but also knowing that it's not the thing you're actively working on is fairly hard, but it's enjoyable. It is funny, like being a secret keeper, I guess, if I would brand myself like that.
Being a secret keeper, but then you have the key to like the gate every day. It's a weird, like Larry's touching on a very funny subject, like walking the line. It really does feel like you're one character away from really like letting it loose. It's kind of scary in a way.
Some of the most stressful points of my work life were actually not even at work. They're say I'm at home on my personal Twitter, and if I like or retweet something on my personal Twitter, I have that like 5 seconds of fear that I just blasted the whole Unity audience with just some random internet thing that no one needs to know about. That's like, that's actually a really big fear of mine. I'm glad it hasn't happened yet, but
the community manager. Manager role. Has always interested me since I feel like in part it has its beginnings in the modding community, right? Just a company communicating with their community in some way or some form. And then it evolved into an actual role in the company that, you know, it really does matter how we are perceived with our audience and how do we engage in them in like the recent years and while social media blowing up and now it's being recognized as very important.
Yeah. And I mean, to your point, I think maybe not just the modding community. I think it really derives from before we had social media, we had forums that needed to be moderated. And so a lot of that, like a lot of the daily chores that you would do, like making sure I haven't seen him recently, but flame wars back in the day were a really big thing. And so just kind of making sure that there's some sort of guidelines and there's some sort of tone set for the community and then kind of holding to that, to the best of your ability, but not appearing like the all being or the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh man, I miss those flame war days.
Yeah, I mean they were what they were.
they're a lot more dangerous now because like your conversation can be shared and spread everywhere, like but through if like on Twitter retweets and replies and oh my god, it's you can't manage it as well as you used to. Like oh, end of thread, you know, that's it. Can't do that shit anymore.
Yeah, I mean it is fun though because you do get to talk to a lot of people and see a lot of different views and perspectives on things. Especially in the tech industry, it's really interesting to see how many different ways, or maybe not tech, but game development, how many different ways there is to do one thing. So if someone comes into our community and has a question on, hey, how do I make this object move from here to there? There will be maybe 4 or 5 people popping in, being like, no, this is the best way. No, this is the best way. And so it's really funny that there's just so many different ways to approach approach problems, and the community that we've built has a lot of them. They have a lot of different thinkers and creatives, so it's fun.
Yeah, like Larry and I have trouble just keeping up with 20 of our followers. Yeah. I can't imagine having like that many people just really paying attention to everything you do on social media. Are there kind of warnings or things that you see that people use social media in the wrong way that you would recommend? Hey, maybe think of it as this, because I'm still wrapping my head around how exactly do I manage my time to do this extra work, you know, which is very important because it, sure. it kind of just, yeah.
I mean,
former, yeah.
I don't think there's probably a wrong way to do social media, but I think a lot of what creates value in a channel is your own exposition. And so this idea that people follow you because of your personality, or if you're a company, it's people follow you because of the content that you produce on behalf of your company. But it's also about the spin you take on like industry events. So finding not industry events, but anything that's happening in the industry that your audience is interested in. But then not just sharing it and not just kind of echoing it. It's this idea of like adding your own personality to it. Mm-hmm. So while I don't think there's like a wrong way to do social media, because I mean, there's tons of people that have the little Twitter egg and have just like a bunch of stuff that maybe no one will follow.
Yeah.
But to make yourself really good at, or to make your account really, really strong, it's a lot about kind of finding your own voice and making that appealing to your audience, if that makes sense.
Oh, I definitely know the wrong way to do social media when it comes to being like, let's say an independent game developer or artist, or, you know, just somebody trying to build something, is like spamming the things that you do in a way that it's like super advertising. Like, hey, I just reduced the price on this awesome game I just made. And people are like, I wasn't going to buy your game anyway, so why do I care that you reduced the price? Like, you know, I think you'll see more success with behind the scenes or in development or just cool like side content, and a lot less of like product updates versus product development updates. You get what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like, I think you can do a lot better. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, different content definitely lives better on different channels. And so stuff like content updates, while it does fine on Twitter or wherever you're posting it, you don't want it to be your only content, basically, is what I'm trying to get at. Is you want to make sure you have your own voice in everything that's going on, and not just your own voice in what you're doing, if that makes sense.
Sorry to interrupt your Twitter feed, but hey, my game is on sale. Google Play, $2.99. Like, $2.99. No likes, no retweets, no nothing. It's just going to sit there.
Yeah. I definitely spend a few minutes of my day kind of like slowly filtering out a lot of spam that comes through. And that's not like someone that's tweeting at us 10 times a day. Like, that's valid, but that's like a bot that's constantly on our hashtag or constantly doing something and just making my life harder. So you're right. That is the wrong way to do it, because then it's instantly just off of my radar.
Yep. Oh man, we're so desensitized to that kind of marketing.
So let's walk back all the way from the college days. So how about did you get into this? Because this is pretty crazy, man. Like, Unity, if anything, of all the companies, game companies in the last 6-7 years, mm-hmm. I thought Unity just completely obliterated the rise of any other company. Like, they just, their increase is insane. And I was telling, like, Larry, we visited Unity a couple weeks back or a month back.
Thank you, Unity.
Thank you, Unity. What was impressive was, like, I was telling Larry right away, like, there's a lot of young, high-spirited. I mean, there's a good mix of, like, let's just call it experience, and then young, hipster, like, forward-thinking type of people. And it was a really interesting mix that I wasn't used to.
Yeah.
Sure.
But it lends to how Unity just was able to adapt and change so quickly compared to everyone else.
Before you jump in, I want to kind of co-sign, like, at Unity, there were men, there were women, there were old, middle, young, and there were all races, sexual orientation. Like, there was everything. Anything that you could say was like a cultural hot button that you would complain about somewhere else, Unity was like, nah, it's like utopia over here. You know what I mean? It was like,
yeah.
I couldn't find one thing to complain about personnel-wise.
Yeah, I mean, the company is really diverse, and just kind of watching them. I mean, so I mean, taking it back when I started at the company, the San Francisco office was maybe 30 people. Mm-hmm. And you saw the most recent office is six stories with a side building with three more stories, a few hundred people. And so it's really interesting to watch it grow, and not just to watch it grow, but to watch it kind of form this culture, mm-hmm. Of old, young, anything you can really think of, honestly. And it's just like, it is really interesting to work with very experienced people. It's really interesting to work with a bunch of new people coming in with new thoughts. I think you were trying to get at something else before that. Let me try and rewind it.
Just generally, you know, your start from the college days and then into the first thing. Like, that's always interesting to a lot of people.
Sure. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I kind of just walked into Unity and got a job. Not
home runs. No,
I think Brandon almost did the same thing. He was there for his first day orientation, apparently.
Yeah. Oh, really? That's funny. No, I mean, so I was going to school in San Francisco. I was going to the Art Institute, and I'm fairly privileged in the fact that GDC is also in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And so when the time came around for GDC, my school was had some connections at Unity that were kind of just looking for volunteers, looking for someone to kind of run game demos, booth demos. And so I signed up for that and got that really quickly. But the first day I came in for like my volunteer orientation, I went up to the front desk, I introduced myself and kind of just asked if there was anyone willing to talk to me about a potential job, and that turned into a job 4 hours later. I really lucked out. I mean, I wish I could say it's that easy for everybody, but
you're really good at interviews.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's why you're the community manager.
Dude, I gotta hand it to you, man. I've never heard of that approach, so I'm really happy.
Yeah, that's a crazy approach. Yeah.
But now you screwed over the Unity security guard as soon as this podcast goes live.
Yeah, I mean, that was a whole different time for the company, though. That was 2013. There was only like 30 people. Everyone in the office knew each other. The one thing about the growth that's been kind of jarring.
It's crazy.
For me, the one thing that's been kind of jarring is I don't know everyone in the office anymore. And sometimes I can have like a meeting with people I don't even know, or have lunch sitting next to someone I don't know, which is really cool in the sense that you get to meet new people. But at the same time, it's fairly jarring coming from a very small, like, niche company to so much of a larger one.
Yeah. I think your name tag needs to say number 30, Blaine. Some people know the different ranks around here.
No, I try not to pull that card too frequently.
Too frequently.
Yeah.
Well, there are times, you know, when there's only two scoops of macaroni left, if your card. What are you, 68? Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's
more
mine.
More frequently, it's someone who's just recently joined the company will ask, like, hey, who are you? Who do you do? And I give them the spiel. And then they ask me, like, how long I've been here. And I tell them 3 years. And that kind of blows their mind because everyone else has been around for not even 2 years, maybe like a half a year to a year. Like, we really expanded a lot. But then there's definitely people that have years on me. Like, my boss, when I was hired at the asset store, had already been there for a year and he's still with us.
You're like, I was here when we were buying our own lunches, man.
That's true. That's actually pretty honest.
I don't even know how bad it was.
Honestly, I think a lot of what lent to me getting this job was just my experience with school, and just this idea that the position I landed was, like I said, kind of moderating art assets, and it would be anything from, hey, this rig's not quite properly set up, I wouldn't be able to fully show them how to fix it, but it would just be like, hey, it's not fully set up, here's like a quick guide to like setting it up, all the way from like, hey, you've got a texture seam, if you just fix that and email me, I'll totally accept it. We just want to try and keep some standards on the store. And I mean, the asset store as a whole has actually exploded even since I've been there. I don't know if you know, but the way that the asset store works is you'll submit an asset and it'll be put in this line, basically, and the line is all the assets waiting to be looked at. And so back when I started, the line was maybe 150, 200, maybe 300 at maximum. And I looked at it more recently within the past few months, and the queue or the line's been up to like on average 900 to 1,100.
Damn.
And that just blows my mind, the amount of expansion and the amount of assets that fill the asset store. But that's also kind of one of the things I really like about Unity, is if Unity doesn't have a solution that you want or doesn't have a solution you like, you can either build it yourself or you can look to someone else who's already built it and then hopefully integrate it to your project, which is really cool.
Plug and play, man.
Yeah, really.
So I have a question, though. Since you got to see a lot of the assets in development before going to the asset store, did you ever see like a gold rush as far as like, oh, wow, I can get on the asset store and people would just put, here's 900 rocks. 1099, you know? Is there a lot of that going on in the early days?
In the early days, maybe not as much. Nowadays, what you'll kind of see is, I don't have a whole lot of sales background, but I assume how an actual economy works is, obviously there's a lot of demand, and so what'll happen is there'll be an asset that, say, sells really well, and people deem that that's really high demand right now, and so say it's like a low poly fantasy, just for the sake of the argument. All of a sudden, there'll definitely be an influx of people creating similar packages to try and compete with that one, and I think you see that on a very frequent basis, but I think that kind of just echoes life, in a sense, in like a micro scale. But you definitely do see that.
It's like the app store. Yeah. Larry loves the app store, by the way.
That's funny. Have you ever published the app store?
Back in the day I did. I had my own iOS game development company.
So, yeah. Oh, cool. Cool. Yeah.
But yeah, one of his biggest gripes. One of the biggest gripes with him, and what was happening with the Apple Store, was this kind of the similar issue where, Flappy Birds, super popular, and then there was like Flappy Chickens, diluting the market a bit.
Just for fun, just say Flappy and a noun, and you'd be like 99% right. Like, it's already there.
99% chance to hit something already.
So bad. It was so bad.
Yeah.
So do you feel like with the asset store, now it's being, there's so many influxes that your audience has to kind of come from another source besides just to stand out from the crowd a bit, you know what I mean?
To stand out from the, well, I think what's always distinguished, and this is just speculation, I think what's always just distinguished the assets that do really well is the quality and the time that gets put into it. So you can easily create like a flipped asset copying someone else's work, and it might sell a little bit, it might do all right. But I think the people who kind of stand by their work and the people who support their work after launching it are the ones that have become really successful in the asset store. And so it's kind of a testament to this idea that they become support to their customers. And so like, say someone makes a large extension and hey, new Unity version comes out, as soon as this new Unity version comes out, the more successful products will be able to take in like bug fixes and fix their products so that they can kind of keep it up to date with the actual core engine. And so I think while there has been a large influx in the gold rush analogy, it's a testament to the people that put hard work in will probably get a lot more out of it, if that makes sense.
So let's talk about the growth of the Unity community then, because, obviously Unity starts, I would say, very GarageBand roots, like, hey guys, we made this engine at GDC, here's a CD with like a free version of Unity on it. Like, I remember those days.
Check my engine out.
Exactly. And then now it's like internationally known, like translated in different languages, the tutorials and the information is everywhere. Everybody is using Unity, on every level, AAA, mid-level, independent hobbyists. Like, you guys are synonymous with independent game development for sure, and definitely making a big stand on professional top end game development as well for big companies. How does that feel just to be part of that?
It feels really good, actually. You get, like I said earlier, you get to kind of talk to people from all different experience levels. You get to talk from people to people from all different backgrounds, and growing with the company has felt really good. It's pretty crazy. I think one of the keys to their success was, one of our pillars at Unity is this idea of democratizing game development, and this idea that you can build on one platform, or one engine in this case, and kind of push out anywhere you'd like. I think that's like, that was a huge selling point in the early adoption of Unity, and that kind of drove the initial growth that they saw. And I think the community's really grown alongside that in terms of scaling fairly well. And I mean, yeah, I think they just did such a good job at targeting that one specific thing that they wanted to target that it really helped in the end.
Yeah.
Like the craziest thing is like finding that spark, but a lot of the companies have a hard time or at least struggle with maintaining that growth, like the exponential growth and like just channeling the community to grow with it in a way. And like just your time there, the 3 years, that's so crazy that it grew from 32, let's just say 1,000. It feels sure. like 1,000 people over there.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the San Francisco office too. So when I joined the company, I was probably like 400, not 30, but I was 30 in San Francisco.
Everything starts in San Francisco.
Everything starts in San Francisco. That's fair. I mean, the company started in Copenhagen.
Yeah.
I think it's funny. A lot of people know Unity, but random question. Do you know the first game that was ever made with Unity?
No. What is it?
I believe it was a game called Gooball.
Gooball.
No. Yeah, and it was kind of like I believe it was David Helgeson and the original co-founders like project that they did, and they kind of took it from there and turned it into a game engine because they realized they had built something really cool.
Oh man,
nice.
That is the best story right there. We just made this little game, and the editor we made to make the game is like probably more valuable than the game, so we sold that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool, man.
It is cool. I think it's really interesting how it started. Some of the other game engines kind of started with a title. And I guess in a sense, Unity did start with a title, but it wasn't like the key selling point. And so instead, the tools and the engine were the key selling point, which is really neat.
What year did they begin all this?
Ooh, that is a good question. I want to say 2006. 2003.
I was guessing 2003. Since we're playing,
I wish I knew that off the top of my head.
I know.
I didn't realize we were playing 20 questions here.
Well, actually, that reminds me. We have this new segment at Game Dev Unchained. It's a little game that we play with the guests. It's called The Fast Five.
The Fast Five.
So how it works is I'm going to ask you five rapid fire questions and I need five rapid fire answers. Now, how well you do depends on how quick you answer, but it's just for fun. We don't give out t-shirts or anything. So Blaine Pastor, are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. Question number one, what is your favorite game that was made with Unity?
Ori and the Blind Forest.
Oh, nice one. That's easy. All right. Question number
two. Gorgeous and good. Like, you can't fight that.
they do a great job. Question number two. What's your favorite company that actually does products with Unity? Like, what's your favorite Unity developer?
Ooh. I mean, does Blizzard count? Okay, Blizzard.
Blizzard counts. All right, so Hearthstone player.
Not personally, but they're definitely my favorite company that has made a Unity title.
Oh, gotcha.
Technicality.
Rapid fire, that's what happens.
Now, question number three. What made you want to go to the Art Institute for college?
I wanted to do special effects in films.
Oh, nice. Question number four. What was the special effect and film that kind of like made you say, holy shit, this is it for me, I want to do it?
Oh man, it was definitely, that's funny because I actually remember this. It was definitely one of the Lord of the Rings films. There was a scene where they just had a massive orc army and it was all CG. And from that moment on, I was just like, I want to find my way into CG, find my way into arts, films. And then it kind of just transferred over to video games and my passion for those. So definitely Lord of the Rings.
All right. Awesome. Last question. This is the toughest one. Playing past
toughest.
You. Yeah. Question number five. If any one game that exists that wasn't made in Unity could have been made in Unity, that Unity could have done better, which game, like Unity could have made this game better, which game would you say?
Unity could have made the game better. Exactly. I mean,
like, had they just chosen to use
every other engine, game?
Yeah. No, I mean, honestly, all the above. I think. I think the game boils down to the people creating it, and the tool supplements that. And so I don't know how to properly answer that one, because I think a lot of games can be made in Unity that do really well. A lot of games that could be made in Unity could do fairly poorly. Mm-hmm. It really boils down to the team and their drive and their experience and want to publish it. So not to take a cop-out answer, but no, I think it boils down to the people making the game, and the tools are there to supplement them.
Man, the guys at Unity, when they hear that answer, they're like, yes, that's a good, solid, you know, non-competitive answer.
I mean, that's just personally how I feel, too. Like, an artist doesn't blame their pencil or paper if something comes out wrong. It just boils down to amount of effort you want to put into something.
Man.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you guys feel the same way when my hit game comes out and you guys come looking for the money. Like, hey, man, it's not the pencil, man. It's just me.
We're going to blame the pencil here.
No, I actually think I really like Unity's pricing model. Like, I forget, but if I make a certain, I can just pay for the Unity Pro license and release my stuff. And, you know, what, $1,500 is the recoup?
So let me try and recall this.
Sure.
We have 3 current pricing tiers, free, which includes all the core engine, and then there's some services that you can pay a little extra to gather. There's Plus, which is $35 a month. And that, I believe, gets you access to one of everyone's most like heated discussions of the dark skin UI versus not the dark skin UI. But then you also get some extra service and stuff. And then Pro, which I believe is $75 a month and kicks you up a little higher. And I think the only time that really changes is when you're working with a game that hits a revenue cap. I think the Plus subscription, if you make over $100,000 from your game a year, you have to give us a little bit of that. Is not a little bit of it, but you have to pay a little more. And I think with Pro, it's $200,000. And so, I mean, it's really cool because it boils down to our like core pillar again of democratizing game development is, hey, for free, anyone can really use the engine and anyone can publish a game. It's only when you want to kind of take that to the next level as either an indie or a hobbyist, or you want to take that to the pro level, that you really need to start paying, unless you have a super mega hit and then you hit the revenue cap super fast. But
that revenue
cap. I really liked the revenue cap. Yeah, I really liked. I believe it was with Unity 5 when we switched our subscription model to free, or we switched our pricing model to free. I thought that was a really smart decision.
Mm-hmm. That was the shock heard around the world, man. And at the time, I was like super Unreal fanboy. So I need to thank you guys so much for being the first to kind of go free like that, because Crytek, Unreal were very soon after. And so then everyone was like, yes, game development tools have now hit like free. Like, anybody can learn, anyone can make, anyone can share and publish. It was like the start of the Renaissance for me. It was so awesome. So I definitely remember you guys going free.
I mean, talking about other game engines, Unreal was definitely the first game engine I learned. And I think I then learned Unity, and Crytek I never even tried to touch because I remembered its import pipeline was so confusing that I didn't want to deal with it.
It's pretty crappy.
School they taught us Unreal. And I think while I was actually in school, the focus kind of shifted from this idea of Unreal to Unity. And so it was kind of surreal to watch all of the programming classes, all of my like mid-level programming classes and art classes switch from Unreal to Unity. Was pretty neat.
I think it's a smart move, though, and I may not have understood it at the time as a teacher, but the more I spend time with Unity and the more I work with it, I see long-term merits that are just seeds today, right? Like, with all these students, all these companies having access to a free tool, learning it, it's very popular on the Asset Store, on the iTunes Store, with all the softwares that I'm seeing. It's like, you guys are creating just this wave of people who are behind this product, you know, and that's only going to continue. People are only going to get better at Unity. They're only going to be making more and more beautiful games or more fun stuff. And so I'm now sitting here like, damn, like 10 years from now, am I going to see games that come out in other engines besides the free ones that I see today? Right. Like, what's Frostbite going to mean 10 years from now? I'm serious.
That's a good question.
That's a question I ask because I'm like, there's going to be less and less people going into the industry that are learning these like exclusive engines, and more people who have built careers out of using Unity, yeah, Unreal. You know what I mean? It's going to be so hard to find and train talent in these other areas when it's so plentiful in these other areas. It's like I'm like so intrigued to see what the landscape is 10 years from now as far as engine wise.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to make Star Wars games, you would learn Frostbite. That's pretty much how. If you want to make one, you gotta learn EA's rule of thumb stuff. But like the Unity's growth, and I feel like its accessibility and everything, the most impressive thing about it has been just how you guys nurture the community to communicate with each other. It seems like every time I talk to an indie developer about their community, it's just about how they get together, talk about things, trade like little tips and tricks, and of course they're all using Unity. And I feel like it's the first out of all the engines that had built off of that type of mindset out of everyone else.
I mean, I've talked to people who said that they joined Unity just because, or not joined Unity, but started using Unity just because the community looked so helpful. Mm-hmm. And I mean, when you guys were in San Francisco at the office, you got to see our local SF user group, and we aid those around the world. We don't like actually host them. We're really lucky that the San Francisco one gets to use our office, and I think that's great for them. And I think it's really cool that even though we're not officially putting these on ourselves, that the community kind of pops up and makes all these user groups and makes all these places where you can kind of come ask questions of other people, come just meet other developers that are kind of like you, and kind of just share some knowledge, I guess.
Yeah, that was crazy. I saw a guy doing like a Steve Jobs presentation about Unity, and I was like, oh, is this part of the company? They're like, no, this is the user group. They're just off the street, like in Unity,
you know, winning.
One floor off up, the street. Private trade secrets, you know, like whiteboards that they're not supposed to see. But hey, let's just all. No, seriously, I was like, man, these guys really give a shit. I should stop cussing.
Yeah.
They really care about the development and the nurturing of the community behind the product. And I really feel like you guys do it right. And I'm not even the fanboy. I'm just being honest. Like I really feel the care and the concern and the interest in like maintaining that cycle between the community that uses the product and then the development of the product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's been kind of fun to see the community grow into some of the different verticals that we're looking at right now. So like games, the engine was obviously a game engine, and I think it will always be at its core like a game engine. But we're also seeing cool new things like VR and film experiences, and it's used in the automotive industry. So it's kind of cool to see people of like different backgrounds aside from games joining us, mm-hmm, which is fun. Especially with like the explosiveness of VR and some use of it in films has been really interesting to see.
Yeah, like going off of that, like I'm definitely seeing a convergence of two different groups that I knew of before. And I'm talking about, you know, Larry and I come from kind of like a AAA development background, and so we're used to those guys and how those guys work. And so it really wasn't until we went up there to Unity and just being a part of that like indie talk at Unity where I just met these type of people that I knew existed but never really been a part of. And it really did feel like something. It's the same feeling that I get when I go out and I see these 12-year-olds playing a game on their phone that I'd never heard of, but it's obviously popular. And it's one of those things where, yeah, I'm growing old, where I'm not paying attention to what's hot anymore. But at the same time, it's just like this whole other side of game development that I never really paid attention to. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm being exposed to from just the accessibility is being there and this, the sense of community is stronger than ever before. And it's really cool to see that type of growth because we're still a young game industry, right? So sure. Seeing these type of changes happening so fast within my own decade of just game development experience has been very impressive. So I can't wait to see what kind of pivots we're going to make in the future with all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, we're talking about film experience, we're talking about VR, which is a whole different landscape. Utilizing all these different engines. I just can't wait to see what will come out of all this. I mean, I know it's going to end up being the Matrix, but I like seeing the in-between developments getting there.
When you plug the thing into the back of your head, it's going to say made with Unity.
It's so going to be made with Unity, man.
That's funny. I can't wait. I mean, when you plug something in the back of your neck, I think that's that means you made it. we've hit it. I don't think anyone can possibly imagine what happens after that anymore.
Seriously.
But it's funny, but it's probably going to be true. Like, Elon Musk was arguing with Zuckerberg in the headlines now, talking about how AI is going to, like, eventually hurt us and we should be wary of their, you know, we should put some laws in before the it's too late type stuff. But
sure.
It's definitely going to be made with Unity. Like, the first AI is going to be...
Are you trying to imply the first killer robot's going to be made with Unity? Because I don't think so.
I hate to say it, and I probably shouldn't even say this on the podcast, but I feel like we're only like weeks away from the first person attaching like a gun to a damn drone. And you know what I mean? Like, it's, you can do that now. You know, that's the scary part. It's like, what do you do? Like, how do you even...
You put some points and achievements. That's terrible.
But that's a real fear that I have. Is like,
that's a real fear.
I was thinking what I've seen the other day is like, oh, go ahead.
Well, you see like these drones going a little off topic. You see those guys with drones now where they put the VR headset and with the GoPro camera on the drone and they're just flying it around.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, that, you know, that guy is like half a mile, you know, to your left. You see what I'm saying?
I look at it and I'm like, look at this peeping Tom. This guy's this guy's spying. What are you doing?
If you see a drone flying near you, that person is at most or at least 7 minutes away, I think. Because what is it, like a 15-minute average flight time? Very, he could be 7 minutes away. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh my god, it's so scary.
That's all thanks. That's all thanks to the game industry, man. It's crazy, man. Talking about converging is like these industries are going to rely on us. Like, even film nowadays, they're trying to create an interactivity with the movies to see what is the next reason for people to go to theaters. And
yeah, I mean, I think as we move forward, both industries will learn a lot from each other. Like, a great example is we recently started bringing some like film quality tools into our engine, but in return, there's also people who for the past few years have been using our engine to create shorts or different aspects of films. And so I think as we move forward, it'll kind of be this symbiotic like learning experience for both, and who knows what it'll blossom into. But it'll be a fun time to kind of like grow and learn. Definitely.
Amen. I'm excited to see the new developments coming out of Unity. I know you guys are probably working on some cool stuff, but there is one question I can ask is there any insight as to why you guys go from like Unity 5, 6, 7, 8 to now Unity 2017.x?
I mean, so last year we moved to a subscription service, and I think that actually just moving to like the yearly type naming convention, you see a lot of software doing it, like Adobe moved like years ago to just like either just having Adobe or like a version number.
Gotcha.
That's not necessarily bound to like a number, but more tied to like when it was released. I think it helps with clarity, and I think it kind of just helps aid the subscription system that we've moved into. It's like, if you're paying for a year of subscription, that year is 2017 of March to 2017 of April. And I mean, I can't speak for why it was chosen specifically, but that's kind of just my guess and my speculation. Yeah, I think it moving forward, I think it's just healthier. You don't want to have Unity 27. Yeah. It's not like we have 15 Final Fantasies already.
Yeah. I see software and hardware doing that a lot. Like, I'm pretty sure PS4 at some point it's going to be PS 2020,
the PlayStation.
I mean, those are interesting because those don't iterate as quickly as a lot of softwares do. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, well, we're not, we'll see. I mean, I hope we don't get to the point where I'm buying a new PlayStation every year.
Scorpio Pros now. It's like I'm losing track, man.
Yeah.
I think soon enough, consoles are going to get to the point where they just need to be good enough to stream the video.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that everything else is offsite. Like, that would be great.
It's going to be on cloud.
Yeah. Hasn't Sony already started doing that with their Now service?
Yeah, they're pioneering it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they bought a whole, is it Gakkai E or something? Where they do all the hardware through the cloud. Yeah, and so you have the ability to play off of any phone or tablet or whatever.
Now think about if the PlayStation 5 was simply just a controller and a Netflix account, right? Like, game changer. Seriously, though. You know what I mean?
I mean,
that's what they're going to do. Yeah. That's, I have
a good feeling. PlayStation 5, $90. You just need a damn controller and a smart TV. Right? Like, that's.
I mean, to be fair, when I bought my PlayStation 4, it was definitely a Netflix box for a while. But it wasn't intended to be.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to that life where people understand, like, I'm not going to invest in these boxes every 2.5 years now, 3 years. What is it? Because they have the Now half generation that's coming out. Mm-hmm. The faster they get to, hey, player, just buy this controller and pay us X dollars a month for our online service, access to all these games, which will just beam to you. I'm done.
That's crazy. Need a box. I remember. That's fair. I remember years ago, probably like 2008 or 2009, I think there was a few streaming services that tried to do that on your PC where you would just pay. It was post Napster and post LimeWire, but it was definitely around. It was around. I don't know. Is GameFly still around? It was definitely like possibly. Wild
GameFly. I think it is. Yeah, GameFly is still around. Yeah. Oh man, I can't believe it's still around, to be honest.
Yeah. But yeah,
it's GameFly right now.
That's a good question. Yeah, I could think of one.
Yeah.
I bet lots of YouTubers probably use GameFly because instead of buying games that they need to play to keep their content fresh, they probably just, I'm sure some of them use GameFly. I don't know the number, but
it's possible. I mean, if you're a pretty big YouTuber, I imagine people just send you their games. Also, honestly.
Damn. So jealous. I mean, yeah.
Well,
that's what being an influencer of some sort is like.
You get free stuff. So.
Speaking of influencers, if it wasn't for Blaine, podcast audience, Brandon and I would not have been able to go and actually see behind the scenes at Unity, which led to a couple of great relationships and him being on this podcast with us. So again, special shout out to Blaine for putting that together, and definitely a big shout out to Unity. Thanks for being awesome and caring about people using your product.
Yeah. Definitely thanks to Unity for enabling us to do it, for sure. It was a really easy sell, actually. I went to my boss and I was like, hey, I want to help grow relationships in the community and help kind of empower a few like select people. And he was just like, sure, here's your budget.
I just threw money at you.
Yeah. Hey, I didn't have time to count this.
It's a very very cursory glance of the exchange, but it boils down to the fact that the people above me wanted to enable the same thing, and I think that's really cool to work at a company that kind of echoes the sentiment for community and echoes the idea that it's kind of the foundation of a lot of who we are as a company.
So that's the cool thing that you did on the Unity side. Is there anything that you would want to see like happen from the community side, right? Like, I would love it if the community itself did more of X or more of Y or more of, you know what I mean? Like, without your involvement or handholding.
That's a good question. I mean, I would like to see some more game jams happen personally. Game jams, art jams. I know when I was going through school, a lot of what kind of encouraged me and motivated me was the PolyCount art challenges they would hold. And I think, if developers kind of got into this habit of like creating these open, not competitions, but just spaces for people to work towards a common goal, compare, share each other's knowledge. And I think that would kind of lend towards more people getting knowledge quicker. And like this idea that we'd be able to kind of accommodate for more backgrounds and more types of people. So personally, I think some group challenges, some group critiques, some group work studies, I guess, for lack of a better word, would be what I'd really like to see.
Oh, that's awesome. I agree.
It's going to be some sort of gameception where you're walking around as an avatar and you're game jamming within a game.
Second Life.
You can have that one for free. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, it'd be cool to have a virtual space where you can meet up. I mean, that would be the next form of forums, basically. The funny thing about forums is, like you said, like the Polycount days has been so, influential and inspirational for every game developer out there. But mm-hmm. forums has not changed. It's still mostly ugly, right? And yeah. It's just a message board. So, it's really weird. No one has that ever like upgraded or evolved that.
I was going to say, sure. Blaine, actually, you jump in. You're the guest, but I have a comment.
Okay. I mean, go ahead.
So I feel like forms for us was just the text, right? Like text and mm-hmm. graphics at most, maybe some glitter GIFs. Like, oh, this is, you know what I mean? But like, glitter. I think kids and like high schoolers nowadays are YouTube is their form. They have their content at the top, and then all the comments works. So much so like forum, you know what I mean? Where it's like, it is a persistent conversation between individuals garnished under usually some sort of subject matter, which happens to be the video. So I feel right. The forum experience is kind of wrapped into YouTube now for people who didn't get down like we did back in the day.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, Brandon, to your point, I think people have tried to like replicate forums or tried to upgrade them, and you see like now you see Discord, I think just recently passed Slack as the most used communication tool or something.
Right.
Which is insane. Which is seriously insane to think.
It's quick. That was quick. That's some Unity growth.
But I
think it was only announced like a year ago or two, right? At least I heard of it. Yeah.
I mean, it targets a huge audience, so I think that makes sense. But something the forums will have that'll be really hard to replace is the idea of permanence, like really easily finding knowledge. And so when you look at programs like Slack or Discord, sure, there's a lot of ways to communicate and talk to other people. But if I, a year down the line, had a question, mm-hmm. and the cool thing about forums, I can go in there, search my question, find the answer. It's still there. It might be a little outdated, but you can kind of work with it as long as you understand like the knowledge behind it. And so that's something I think will be a challenge to replicate. It's just this idea of having a really findable like base of like it, a forum basically just becomes a pool of knowledge after it's been around for long enough.
Here's a solution.
Solution. Yeah.
You know how Facebook has the share memories?
Sure.
Like on this day this was posted. I mean, that would be a way to kind of pull up old crap.
Or pull up old crap in like a messenger format or
yeah well like it's straight up like a year ago this was commented on or something. And
yeah, I mean, that's fair,
a way to just kind of bring it up again, and then maybe there's an extra link that shows you know, on this day these are the things that were talked about. Like that's the only time I've seen like old stuff coming up on its own based on an algorithm that I find sometimes pretty useful. Like, oh man, yeah, I did post this. Oh, it's kind of cool.
Without me, we'll hide this. I don't want to see this anymore.
Like, oh man, what's up with my hair that time? Yeah. But like,
that was really cool.
Yeah. There you go. Someone make that.
Someone make that.
Do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think down the line there will probably be a solution. I think that's just something that's kind of led to forums sticking around. It's this idea that it becomes a pool of knowledge.
Yes. No, I definitely agree. Like just having – that's the thing with Slack and Discord nowadays. It's just everything is a passing comment. And then after it gets out of your like maximum window, it's like it's forgotten. Like I'm not digging through that.
Yeah. One of my biggest pet peeves is at work, if someone direct messages me on Slack with a question, that's like a fairly important question, because personally, I would much rather have the permanence of it sitting in my email or my every 10 minutes when I look at my email that it's there versus like, oops, the notification's gone. I totally forgot that I needed to that I needed to do this.
You're basically reading it as it's like going down. It's just disappearing in 5 seconds.
Yeah, don't have a conversation after that question. And then it's
forget about
scrolled
it.
Up so far.
Well, Slack is the only one that has nested comments, right? Discord doesn't have that. You can nest comments underneath
each other. I believe Slack has it and Discord doesn't.
But it still moves down. That's the problem. It's like a bunch of comments moving down at once.
Yeah.
But
I mean, that's just kind of like social media, and the amount of people online nowadays is like massive, and it's hard to keep up. Well, I think it's really funny.
Speaking on that, okay, and I'll follow up with that. Okay. Go ahead.
I thought it was really funny. One of my favorite things to see on the Unity Twitter account is if someone like at mentions us and then they say something like they don't actually see this or something, and I'll just send like a, like it's a little, that was like, your favorite love of just like, hey, I'm here.
Kind of. Maybe you shouldn't blast that. Now everyone's gonna be like, hashtag no one's gonna see this made with Unity.
Hashtag no one's gonna see this.
No one's gonna see my new game on campaign. The iTunes store for $2.99. They're never going to see this.
never. I dare you to even try to see this.
At Blaine doesn't even read these.
You're just going to get me in trouble.
Anyways. It's kind of following up on what you were just saying before, like there's just so much on social. That's to me the most overwhelming part about social media, the social part. It's just so much to keep up with. Like I admire you guys being able to it feels like juggling to me, where you're on these different social platforms. I know there are like programs where you can make one message and it just blasts it on everything else, but even that feels like so much work. And you say like the retention comes from sharing your opinion on top of a topic you share, right? Not just echoing a message. So to me, it's like a full-time job on a full-time job.
I mean, to reiterate, like say we're sharing something from 80 level, for example, like sure, like someone will like that comment from our feed, but what's the value of them following us over following 80 level? And so it's that idea of adding something of substance, adding something to it so that you can kind of have your own take on it, which is what really I think helps succeed.
So I got a question for you. While we were there in San Francisco, you kind of harped on the importance of tagging, you know, your social media posts that made with Unity. And, you know, sometimes you guys like repost that. Do you want to kind of go into that for some of the listeners?
Yeah, I mean, our social media accounts, and for this sake, we'll say Twitter. We run two campaigns, and they're kind of like ways for us to spread awareness. Our first one is, as you mentioned, on Friday, we really actively dig through the Made with Unity hashtag and try and find someone's cool GIF, someone's fun like blog that they're working on, and kind of echoing that across our social to just kind of boost all the awesome things that people are doing in Unity. Mm-hmm. And so that's we share it frequently, but on Friday we really sit down, and that's like Friday is all about sharing community content.
Okay.
And then on Tuesday, we have another hashtag we do, which is Unity Tips. So just hashtag Unity Tips. And that's fun for me personally, because what we do is we encourage people to share their tips. So it's like, hey, did you know you can actually copy paste color values in the inspector? Or hey, you can drag this to here and it'll do this thing. And I think it's really fun to see all the different ways that people kind of work with Unity and all these little shortcuts that they didn't know. Fun fact, my favorite shortcut in Unity is Control Shift F, which will put whatever game object you have selected wherever your camera, your like inspector, your editor window camera is. So it kind of just like, if you're moving stuff around and you found the perfect camera angle and you want your camera right there, if you click your camera and Control Shift F, it'll just mimic the view that you have. And so like stuff like that is what we try and share. And it's stuff like that. We also share, if you make like a, hey, here's this GitHub repository of this custom tool that I've made that I just want people to use and people to share, we also blast those out. Cause I think it's really valuable to share not only knowledge, but resources that other people have made. And so, yeah, those are the two primary social media campaigns. We have a lot more that run like more sporadically, but those have been around for the whole time I've been a community manager.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys ever pull like an Autodesk and just say, wow, look at this tool in the asset store that should probably just be in Unity? Let's go. Let's just go and integrate that and pay this person.
I mean, there's two examples of that already. I think last GDC we announced we brought NGUI. We haven't fully integrated it into the engine, but we've made it free on the asset store and accessible to everyone. And then more recently, we fully integrated, or no, Cinemachine's in the same spot as we took Cinemachine, which is this beautiful like film quality camera rig that you can assign to your game object, your character controller, and it can kind of procedurally and dynamically generate the best shot, it can find you. And so I think that's really cool. And those are two assets that we've kind of nested under our engine, even though we haven't been able to fully bring them in yet. I think, like I said earlier, that's one of the cool things about Unity is if it doesn't work the way you want it to, you can just make it work if you spend some time doing it.
As a community manager working at Unity, what are the biggest goals that you feel that your team wants to achieve within the growth or whatever that you guys want to do for the next 5 years?
More pro subscriptions. Thank you, Brandon.
More pro subscriptions. I'm devices. Just joking.
Yeah. I mean, it's more pro subscriptions. No, I'm kidding. For me personally, I mean, we all have our own goals, which I think is kind of cool. Our team's a team of five, and we all have our own little like subset that we do. And so for me personally, for the next probably year, 2 years, I'm really heavily focused on growing the artist community in both our engine and like an engine adoption, and in like our forums, defining a place where they can find resources, defining a place so they can get started. And so my biggest goal is to bring more artists into Unity personally. And I think that's very achievable with some of the improvements we've made over the past few years. And that's definitely my biggest focus. Aside from that, just overall engagement is something we always want to bring up. Overall activity, overall like community sentiment of like what we're doing, and making sure everyone's kind of, I mean, you'll never get everyone, but making sure that you have a lot of people that kind of like the way the company's going, and that's what we help foster.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, Blaine, I hate to tell you this, but as of just this second, we have been podcasting for over an hour.
Oh, and looks like I don't have time to do my spiel.
Yeah, it is now time for Brandon and I to refill our coffee, and we're going to let you hold down the microphone all by yourself. This is your opportunity to talk directly to our audience and tell them something that you're excited about, something that you're going to promote, or you just want to raise awareness for or draw attention to. Mr. Blaine Pascu, the floor is yours.
The floor is mine. I guess of this whole podcast, one of the things that stood out the most to me was talking about school a little bit. And I think, I'm not quite sure the audience, but assuming some of you are students, my biggest advice to you is to walk in a door and just ask for a job. No, my biggest advice is actually, my biggest advice is to kind of just put in the effort you want to get out, and like, regardless of what school you're going to, it really boils down to the amount of time you spend working on your field, working on your tool, like your kit that you're building yourself. And while I can't guarantee that'll get you a job, that's definitely the right way to think about things. In terms of Unity, we've got a lot of cool stuff coming. Unfortunately, while I do have a gate that I'm holding, unfortunately, I can't say a whole lot. I can say that we've got some really awesome stuff coming. We just released some really awesome stuff with Unity 2017. And so far, the community response has been that it's extremely stable, and specifically Timeline Image Cinema Machine, which were two of the features we launched. I've got a lot of really positive feedback, and we're really happy about that. So if you're ever at a Unity event, such as the upcoming Unite Austin, feel free to find me and say hi. Say, hey, I found you on Brennan and Larry's podcast. And just thank you, everyone that's in the game development community. It's an awesome kind of field to be in.
All right. Well, the Unity logo is black and white. I'm Larry Charles. I'm saying good night.
Hey, this is Brandon Fan. Thanks for joining us. See you guys next week.
I don't know if I was supposed to say bye.
There you go. That was it.
That was it.
If you enjoyed this podcast and you want to stay in touch or continue to follow our developments, then you need to go to facebook.com/gamedevunchained and drop a like and stay in touch. You can also get the direct feed for this podcast on soundcloud.com/gamedevunchained.